Hello, everyone. Welcome to Caster Calls with Zombie Grub. I am here with ZP for episode 37. I did forget. I always forget. thank you, Shane, for co-producing the podcast, by the way. And welcome, ZP. Thank you for joining me. Give me some of your time to talk about commentating. I've been watching your career since basically Overwatch coming out. And obviously, you now cast for the Overwatch League, which is super cool. But I know you've been doing a lot of other stuff behind the scenes, and I've watched you have a lot of opinions on a lot of broadcasts and stuff. So I really wanted to get you on here and listen, basically. I think you have a lot of experience in the industry. So we usually start off with talking about how you kind of got into esports and then just letting you do your thing. So go ahead.
All right. Yeah, so I guess getting into esports, I guess it depends on where you want to start it. I guess if you go all the way back to, okay, how did you even start this? It's like, well, like anything, just, you know, being a kid enjoying video games like way back in the day, right? And, you know, basically predating the era where esports is really making money. You know, my first memories playing online was like playing StarCraft back in, you know, 2000 or so, and, you know, going, hey, I want to get pretty good at this game. Never, of course, like, played that game to competitive level because for Brood War, I was just way too young going into that. It was just like, eh. But, it was a lot of StarCraft way back in the day, and then into Tribes, which is the game that I'd play competitively for a long period of time. And Tribes is an interesting game because you go all the way back to the, you know, 2001 Tribes 2 era. Obviously, that predates the era of like major esports tournaments or anything like that, but the game was actually very competitive at the time. That was back in the era where ladders were a big thing online, and Tribes in particular, in relation to casting, was one of those games that actually kind of helped pioneer a lot of casting techniques that'd be used later on. Because so I don't know if you're, do you remember TSN at all? Like one of the, I think most people know is like the Team Sportscasting Network that did a lot of podcasting. Okay. This is one of those things where like this part where people are like, what is he even referencing here? Well, let me tell you, I'm going to go even further back. So that entire network where I'm trying to think, I know of like people like D-Man, like got in on that, like towards the very, very end. But it actually started as the Tribes casting network. And what people would do back then is that they would cast ladder matches of, games basically on Winamp, like it'd be Winamp podcasting. And later for Tribes 2, they would do stuff like Tribes 2 TV, which was, looking back, pretty revolutionary tech, where you could watch a tournament match that was going on by, they'd like stream the demo that was going on to your clients, because no one had good internet, like video streaming in the current era wasn't that. So it would like stream a demo of the game and sync it up with like a Winamp audio recording, so you could watch ladder matches and everything else. But yeah, so casting was something I saw like way back then. Not something I wanted to do per se, but just, you know, the idea of like, hey, you're playing games competitively. This is being broadcasted to a bunch of people. Yeah, so I guess I'm going like, where did you get your start? I guess it would go all the way back to that, you know, era in the early aughts of, you know, playing Tribes Online.
And what year would you say that was?
So that, that was 2001 to okay. About... how long was I playing Tribes 2 actively competitive? Well, I mean, probably like 2001, like 2005 for dang. That particular variation. Not the new high-res, which I also played, but like, you know, original beginnings goes all the way back then as far as, you know, playing games competitively and also that's, having casting involved.
That's awesome, though. Like, I played Tribes, but this is back when I had no idea what esports was. So I was playing StarCraft on 64. And then eventually I got, you know, PC and was playing Tribes later than that, I would assume. So that's a very original origin story, by the way. I don't think I've ever heard anyone bring this up. That's so sick. So, I mean, you kind of had this background that felt like it could work well with Overwatch. Yeah. But, you know, there's tons of years between 2006 and 2015 is when Overwatch got announced. So what were you doing then?
Yeah, so the part, so for a long time, I guess I'll fast forward, is that like Tribes came back in 2011. Hi-Rez resurrected the series before similarly killing it, because the owner of Hi-Rez really, really liked League of Legends. He's like, you know what? We're going to make our own game, Smite. I like this game better than this Tribes game. And, you know, look, when you're worth like $300 million and you're making your, you know, you have your fortune from Applebee's delivery systems, basically, and you've made your video games company. You kind of get what you want. So it's like, yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, fast forwarding beyond that, because it's just a footnote. Yeah, so the part where I saw, you know, esports is like, hey, wait, this is all I could do as a job, a profession. You know, I kind of, I've done things in reverse. I just did a lot of streaming in Heroes of the Storm. Mm. And you might go, well, why streaming? Is I had friends that worked at Blizzard at the time that, you know, kind of pushed me saying like, hey, you know, we're working on this Heroes of the Storm game, because there were devs at Team One at the time. It's like, you know, we could invite you to Alpha. It's like, hey, you should stream this game. Like, you're pretty good at MOBAs. Like, you can play this competitively. I'm like, all right, you know, I'll give it a shot. But it was like very, very effective for getting the streaming, because I had, you know, very early privileged access to, you know, a Blizzard game, where, you know, Blizzard games, you know, especially back in that time era, it's like, holy shit, I want to play a Blizzard game. And, you know, being able to stream something that not a lot of people had access to, that's like one of the very few, like, very good ins to streaming, right? So really the first part that, you know, doing esports was actually a job rather than just a hobby, you know, on the whole, was Heroes of Storm streaming. So like, I started as a streamer in Heroes of the Storm and, you know, built to pretty respectable levels for that game. You know, I think, you know, at peak I was at like 2 to 3K concurrents, wherein, you know, the game as a whole like did not get the growth as expected. But yeah, I did a lot of hero streaming. That's what led to my original Overwatch casting opportunities, where, you know, by the time Overwatch came around, I kind of got a little bit burned out on streaming for a while, as anyone who's done a lot of streaming for a while generally will. But, you know, I'll elaborate on it later, but it is kind of funny because it's like, nowadays all your casters like are essentially like, fuck, I gotta stream, whereas back in the day it's like, oh man, I'm a little bit burned out streaming, you know, maybe I should cast.
Yeah, well, how did that transition start then? Because, you know, I was doing StarCraft and I was part of an organization called Base Trade TV, and when Overwatch got announced, we were pretty hyped for it. We also had, you know, an in, so we got early access to it, and we were very interested in making esports content, but it became very evident that creating tournaments for 6v6 is a lot more expensive than 1v1. So yeah, we didn't really go very far with it. But then how did your Heroes of the Storm experience lead to Overwatch? Just you expressed an interest in casting it?
So it's kind of funny. It was originally just going to be streaming Overwatch, because, like, you know, my background was still a lot, you know, even though I, you know, was pretty good at MOBAs and, you know, had a background in RTS and kind of that end, from a hobbyist perspective, you know, competitively, my background was more on the FPS side. So it's like, wait, a Blizzard FPS is coming out. I just want to play this and, like, stream this. Cause I mean, look, playing Heroes of Storm 12 hours a day, I don't understand how I'm not, like, locked up, like, you know, somewhere, and they're going like, this man has just lost it. You know, I don't know. Like, I survived. It was a lot of Heroes of the Storm. So obviously you hit a point where you're like, okay, you know, time for a change, right? Mm-hmm. And Overwatch seemed like a really good fit, but originally just going to be streaming it. The original casting opportunity kind of came out of nowhere, where basically a friend of mine that used to stream Heroes and long quit, did a little bit of casting Heroes, like not with any of the major stuff, just like off and on for Gosu Gamers, which was a, you know, much more prominent org at the time. And I guess he got asked at the time, like, hey, would you like to cast Overwatch for starting a weekly tournament? And he's like, nah, I'm not really into that. And, you know, he just messaged me out of the blue and he's like, hey, you know, do you want to cast this thing? And I'm like, eh, you know, I've been doing a lot of stream, but I'll give this casting thing a go. Because, you know, I've always had interest in broadcasting from a just not even an esports perspective, but just something that my dad is, you know, always talks about when we're watching sports or otherwise. I was like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll give it a shot. And, you know, that's where, also where I met Hex, where Hex was the one that, you know, gave the original invite per se, but you know, Hex had been talking to the Ghost of Gamers people going like, hey, I'd like to cast. So they went to me and they're like, hey, we want to pair you up with this Hex guy, you know, can you put together a practice cast, we're gonna do a screen. I'm like, yeah, sure. And that was really as informally as the old Ghost of Gamers weeklies got started with me and Hex. But I basically got offered that original opportunity because, like, I guess because of the hero stream, but not because of, like, how big my hero stream was at the time, but because I was friends with someone that had at that point quit hero streaming and gotten offered this particular gig. So,
right,
it was unpaid, by the way, back in the day, many things for beginning games. Not something I'd recommend, but is what it was back in, you know, early 2015 into beta.
Exactly. Yeah. Right time, right place. You know, that's it's fairly common in esports. Just making sure that you're available or being available is not possible for everyone. But if you can, then just before you know it, an opportunity comes your way. Now, in 2015, 2016, I was paying, you know, a little bit of attention to Overwatch as a developing esport, and you and Hex were pretty big community casters. You were very beloved back before, you know, Overwatch League had even officially become a thing, back when there was all the teams still in it and you hadn't made, you know, Philadelphia Fusion and all that yet. Did you guys know from the get-go that there was going to be an Overwatch League? Because I feel like the rumor started basically when Overwatch came out.
At the beginning, no. I mean, we were just kind of, we were kind of that weird thing where it's like, hey, we're doing this because it's fun. Like, you know, realistically, I kind of look back as like, hey, your stream is doing super well at the time. You didn't really stream as much and you just did a bunch of casting. But at the time, I didn't even think of like, oh yeah, career and everything else. Just kind of, I don't know, I was just kind of going with it, so to speak. And yeah, Overwatch League at the time, I don't think we first heard about Overwatch League as a thing until like the middle of 2017 now, or maybe it was, what am I saying? I think it maybe was announced. I forget if it was announced in 2016. Like maybe I heard about it at World Cup in 2016, like at the latter end of the year. But when we started in 2015, we definitely didn't know about it. And it would have been like late 2016 at the earliest, because that's when we first, you know, met Monty and Doa. And of course, Monty and Doa, when they got brought in, they were brought in specifically for the idea of Overwatch League, right? So by the time Monty and Doa were involved, Overwatch League was already a thing that had been set up, even if people didn't know about it.
So you seen yourselves as just kind of community commentators when Overwatch League really came into effect. I know there was a couple of big tournaments before Overwatch League really took over, and that's where some people got noticed. But you guys, I felt like, were noticed just from your consistency and delivery. People really liked you, you know, and you were there for some of the big monthly events. But when Overwatch League came around, my understanding is that they had their sights on particular people, and then they even asked some people, like, who do you want to partner with of the people that we've chosen? Sure. So, unfortunately, you didn't get picked up right then and there. You had to wait a couple of years for going into the Overwatch League. Was this a shock to you? Did you take it as a negative sign for your commentary, or was this kind of like, oh, well, you know, things happen, this was for fun anyways?
Oh, of course it was a shock. I mean, it was also a decent reality check, because I feel like casting-wise, every caster has to get knocked on their ass to, like, understand what the fuck this industry is. Like, because I guess I'll explain the shock there, but also go, like, lessons learned. Is that, yeah, I mean, Nate Nanzer in the World Cup of that year, it was like the World Cup LA stage, I remember Nate Nanzer walking up to me and Hex, you know, going like, hey, I want both of you to cast the Overwatch League, you know, shook my hand and everything. And we were in negotiations and everything was good up until a week and a half before BlizzCon of that year, the World Cup that was being held. And, you know, I get a email going, yeah, what's it called? We're rescinding your invite to cast this year. Now, as I had thought, that sucked, by the way. Like, because the original plan for that year was announcing all the Overwatch League casters as being the guys, because those were the Overwatch World Cup casters that year were Monty Doa, Mi Hex, and Uber Nex. And of course, that was five out of the six Overwatch League casters. But what had happened is that Semler, you know, had been reached out to, because that was like the one thing Overwatch League didn't have yet, right? They didn't have a big name from CSGO. And, you know, when they're throwing out decks to investors and everything, there's, you know, a big part of, yo, we're attracting the biggest names for the biggest games. And at the time, like, Semler was like, had a very good reputation from CSGO. I mean, still does in CSGO, but, you know, as far as like the climate there. Mm-hmm. And it kind of worked out that they were able to get Semler to cast the league at the last moment. And they went to Semler and they go, well, you know, we had these two guys lined up, you know, for the final duo spot. You're going to go into the spot. Who do you want to cast with? Semler, inherently more play-by-play, Hex on the color side. And, you know, it was just a very easy choice for Semler. So Semler decides, oh, yeah, I'll go with Hex. So that's how that entire thing went down. And obviously that sucks. But it's also, here's the thing about the casting industry. And I think the sooner, like, casters learn this, the better. It doesn't fucking matter how beloved you are by the community or, like, what you think your work ethic is or like what you think you deserve or otherwise. These things do not matter in how people get hired. I mean, they have some input for sure. Like, obviously you don't want to be hated by the community and, you know, be a lazy piece of shit. I mean, that probably won't bring you anywhere very quickly, but just because you do everything right and you think you have everything going for you does not mean even one iota that when a big event comes around, you're necessarily going to get hired. There's other factors that go into it way beyond the craft of casting. And that is a lesson, you know, maybe not everyone should learn the way I did, because that really, really sucked, but that is information people should have firmly in their head in the casting world. Like, because you are going to get owned by it, not if, but when. That's just the way it goes.
Whether it's right or not. Some harsh realities coming out, yeah. But it's absolutely true. I mean, if people don't, I guess, understand where you're coming from, then I can at least echo the sentiment and agree that, like, yeah, I think, I gotta say, I feel like it is the case that every caster has to be knocked on their ass at least once.
Yes.
At least a year of trying really hard, thinking you're doing really well, and then not getting the bigger gig or the big gig or any gig, actually. That definitely happened to me. I'm certain it happened to other people. You know, for some people, it's not so dramatic, I feel, but it is still... It does still happen, because yours is the most dramatic I've ever heard, to be honest. You know, for you to actually be approached and, you know, casually offered and to have it rescinded, that is I was flabbergasted listening to that story, man. I just sat there with my mouth open. What a harsh reality. So I mean, let's focus in on the point that you said, like, there's other factors. What do you think are those other factors, and if there is a list of them that you have?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is, by the way, an evolving list going on over time, because, like, broadcasts have more and more considerations for what they want to build out and otherwise. But, I mean, you know, I think the number one thing is, as time goes on, the biggest thing is what the hell your social profile is, right? Like, I'll get to, like, who you know and whatnot. That helps. But, you know, if you want to control your own destiny, let's be real. We're in an industry now that's heading towards, like, things like co-streaming and otherwise. And, you know, organizers, for a lot of hiring, it's not even so much like how good you are at casting, but the first thing they're going to look at, what are your socials at? You know, do you stream? Do you have a big following? These things matter a lot more than whatever points you think you're gaining by, you know, other methods of advancement, right? Like, you know, I've talked with people like doing tier 3, tier 2 a lot, and, you know, people get really hung up going, it's like, you know, I thought this was a really good cast. You know, what about the finer points of, like, the points I made here? Like, do you think people are paying attention to the fact that, you know, I had this good comment on this or, like, this particular thing? And it's like, you talk with a lot of people that have done hiring and whatnot. I'm just saying in the back of my head, it's like, dude, no one's looking at your cast this, like, fucking closely. Like, this is not what's actually getting you hired. Like, I mean, yeah, you should be good at casting. Like, God, I love the craft of casting. I really do. But it's like, you know, you take a look at it right now. We're absolutely entering into an age where it's like, you need a higher profile. And yeah, there's always going to people point to the exceptions, like, yeah, but this guy got hired and was that big. Like, okay, sure. But look at the majority of people. It's either, you know, people are getting hired either by long existing resumes, built off connections, where this is an industry absolutely heavily based on who you know, or, you know, they're getting big. And you look at the people that are having success. I think, like, Valorant is an awesome example of, you know, not that the situation is awesome, but you look at the great opportunities being afforded, the things like Plat Chat, right, which, you know, is basically co-streaming, you know, more influencer heavy with people like Avast, Wide, etc. And they're getting offered, like, so many better opportunities than the people that have been, you know, off in the trenches during doing, like, the Nerd Street grind and everything else, right? So I would say right now is that I think anyone getting the casting going, like, I want to ascend the casting ladder by doing only casting, it's tough. And even for people at the top of the mountain, I think it should be a very big warning sign that you see most people that have done a lot of tier one casting go heavier into streaming and otherwise, because we're just entering into an era where, God, your social profile determines a lot, like, and is a huge component, you know, right up there with your actual casting product.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I do think this somewhat goes into just the idea that I have, which is that there is a certain amount of just having to be there in the community and in the scene. Like, because I think ultimately what you said about how your casting isn't necessarily what everyone's looking at. In fact, for many people who are hiring, they'll never listen more to your cast other than just like, oh, they talk in complete sentences and they seem knowledgeable. Like, that's it. That they just want to make sure that you can do the job to a degree. But it just seems like the more that you're around, the more that people will accept you as well. When if you do bring on fresh face, new face, it feels like there's always that pushback. But if you're just every which way that people look on these bigger screens, that is, then that seems to be one of the main factors, I think, as far as community acceptance and eventually maybe leading up to the chain of command where they get to hiring you. But it is a brutal, very brutal truth that it's perception and branding and marketing of yourself that matters so much more than the craft of casting, even though that's what this podcast is generally about. Like, we do definitely go over things like branding. So with that in mind, what would you say is the best thing for current casters to do then? Do you think that they do need a streaming schedule and that they need to be making TikTok posts and getting Instagram followers and all that good stuff? Or is it something else?
I mean, I think there's not necessarily one set path. I think there's some paths that are very straightforward if you're able to do them, right? Like, if you're really high skill at a game, for example, like, obviously, if you could get to the highest levels of the game and you network with other good streamers, you're streaming and you're playing with, you know, one of the top, like, personalities in the game, right? Like, if you are doing Overwatch, all of a sudden, like, you take a look, and I have a really good example for Overwatch 2 of, like, why this shit is really important. But, like, let's say for Overwatch, you start playing Overwatch and you get up to a really high elo and you're playing with, like, your Emongs, your J3s, you know, some of the top streamers at the time. That'd be a huge start because all of a sudden it's like, okay, we know this guy, you've built something up, etc. Now you might go, well, why is that beneficial again, the casting? I'd like to point to recent Overwatch League finals and who they've reached out to, who they've put on the broadcast, and they have not been reaching out to contenders people to throw contenders people on the broadcaster in grand finals going, we want to involve more people, we're gonna, you know, throw in people from contenders because they've been working on our contenders the entire time. No, they reached out to, like, in the past 2 years, they reached out to people like CarQ and Samito and, you know, Dogman when he was doing content stuff and stuff like that. Those are the people that went on the broadcast. So it's like, if you're looking at what's going on, it's like, wait a second, they just threw these content creators onto the broadcast. Maybe you should create content. And, you know, you look, someone like CarQ, you know, for the most part, very heavily on YouTube, like a big YouTube presence, Overwatch League, trying to bolster their YouTube stuff. So it's like, technically, I mean, you know, if you could back into having a really big YouTube following, holy shit, of course Overwatch League is going to want to get you on some way because they want to boost their YouTube numbers. So, yeah. You know, obviously it depends on which game and what they're looking at and all those other things. But, you know, again, that's kind of one of those things where people that have been on the grind for tier three and tier two will probably hear that and go, like, you know, go, what the fuck, like, get very kind of annoyed going, it's like, but I've done all these tournaments, it's like, yeah, but look who they put in the grand finals, like, I'm not, you know, everything I'm saying is self-apparent, it's not even an argument, like,
yeah, it's actually a argument that I feel like I've seen lately. Maybe you were involved, I think there was a Twitter discussion about how many esports are now bringing up content creators to do type of segments, sometimes analyst segments, and I don't remember what the recent controversial one was, but I feel like it was a couple months ago.
It was like some League streamer.
Yeah,
he came on, I guess, to do a... I think the issue was is that it wasn't a desk, is that he was actually in a cast. And, like, as you know, the people get territorial. It's like, I'm desk, I'm cast. It's like, oh, yeah, you can throw him on the desk for a second. What do you mean you're having this guy cast a full game? Like, what are you doing? Like, people start getting territorial, which, by the way, for good reason, I feel like it is actually a lot easier to mix in an influencer on a desk segment than it is for casting, where casting, obviously, flow gets fucked up real easily, even if you just have, like, two experienced casters that aren't, like, really, they're not comfortable with each other, right? Let alone you throw in someone that's, like, used to streaming and whatnot, and it can... I think in terms of, like, what the viewer is hearing, it's not a compelling product, and I also, that leads me to another segue about, like, are influencers really helping or not, which may or may not matter based on, well, that's what people are getting hired. But yeah, I actually don't think it, most part, it makes for a better product for the viewer, but it is what, you know, companies are hiring and pushing towards.
Yeah. More influencers are being put up on the stage. But then you already brought it up, the co-streaming novelty right now, but we'll see if it sticks. But basically, like, Valorant pushed it, and then there are some complaints about it. But now, to your point, PlatChat is like the go-to co-stream. They seem to very much be in love with the idea of having them do it. So they brought them over to the tournament they're doing right now. Do you think, because I think I've seen you have this conversation as well, do you think that co-streaming is here to stay and that it is beneficial to the broadcast? And second question, is it better for the community to be sharing kind of the streamers and the esports?
I mean, so it's a complicated question, one that is still being figured out. I think, unfortunately, and this goes like way beyond like the realm of casting, this kind of goes into like esports and the business end and the, you know, people courting VC, but esports to some degree is still a lot of smoke and mirrors. And, you know, at the end of it, the people that are organizing things, they want to put a really high number on the amount of people watching, and they will do any sort of massaging to those numbers to get it. So if you're, you know, someone that's running an esports program and they tell you it's like, we have this big streamer that gets 70K concurrents and we can roll these concurrents into our broadcast as like our numbers and then go to people on the VC level and go like, isn't our game fucking great? Look at how many viewers we got here. I mean, from an organizational point of view, it's not hard to see why co-streaming is being embraced by companies right now, because it's a very easy way of boosting things up. Now, are there potential downsides here where it's kind of like, man, I feel great after taking all these amphetamines. Like, when's the crash for all this, right? And the crash is that, well, when you invest this heavily in co-streaming, you know, you also have this weird thing where, okay, what is the message of your product? How beholden are you to the groups that you have now empowered to be big in co-streaming? Like, you know, is it fucking D-Day in a game like Valorant if Shroud, like, comes out and says, fuck this game, and now, like, you know, in the middle of a big major, instead of co-streaming it, is, you know, going to a rival game. What does it mean for sponsors if sponsors start, like, asking questions of, well, we want more enhanced activations, and I sponsor this, but I see, like, the biggest co-streamer you have is actually sponsored by a rival. Like, you have way less flexibility in what the fuck is sponsoring your tournament. But this also kind of gets into the entire, like, even bigger argument of, what the fuck is the point of esports? Is the point of esports for a developer to market and sell its game that it's currently selling a lot of product for? Like, is it a marketing tool for the developer? Or is the goal of esports for an esports org to be profitable and the teams to be profitable for the sake of the esport, which are two very fucking different things? And I think for co-streaming, I think an early observation, I think it's like, obviously very good for right now in the short term for developers to promote. I mean, it does have the potential of whiplash if you put too much power into the hands of people you can't really control. Like, but for the dev end, you are getting more eyes on your product. From the perspective of, are you going to like make profit purely off the esports end by having good monetization with sponsors and, you know, having actual control of that, delivering like a good cohesive product that you can say definitively everyone was watching? Well, that's a little bit tougher.
Yeah, it's such a, it is a very broad subject, but I think you're doing an excellent job of highlighting the good and the bad of it. It is a developing story as well. I mean, bringing it back a little bit to at least Overwatch League, I think that was one of the big questions and big, I guess, not divisive, but just the difference of Overwatch League, I suppose, right? Which was that esports, you know, at best was seen as marketing. You know, I think for maybe a time in StarCraft, it was seen as, well, these companies are trying to make legitimate, like, conventions and tournaments, and they are interested in the esport. They don't get any benefit if you buy the skin, right? MLG didn't get a benefit, especially because there weren't any skins in StarCraft at that time. But then it turned into, like, well, look at League of Legends, you know? Like, they're probably making hella bank just because the Faker uses a golden, whatchamacallit skin. Not League of Legends. So... No. You had that kind of shift, and then it felt like Overwatch League came in and was like, well, we have the skin thing, we have the loot boxes that became another dramatic thing, but we're also going to try and make this a legitimate like sport. Like, we're going to make money off of being at a venue, getting ticket sales and making people buy a lot of our products, like the jerseys and whatnot. Right. And I guess that was kind of, you know, Overwatch League gets a lot of shit. It got a lot of shit. It gets a lot of shit. There's no doubt about that. There's no sugarcoating that. But do you think that that was their goal? I mean, as far as you can say, I don't need to spill any secrets here, but do you think their goal was like, we also want to be the pioneer of esports as a sport product? Or was that just something to, again, enhance sales of skins?
Well, I mean, I think ideally, I think the pie in the sky for the Blizzard perspective is like, have your cake and eat it too, right? And obviously, I would probably guess, and I have no idea about like the internals, like specifics or anything, but I would assume like, you know, you're someone that's leading up the Overwatch League project internally, and you're trying to go, how the fuck do I sell this thing? I think internally to Team 4 and the people more concerned about the game, because Overwatch is, you know, a very profitable game series, you go, look, this is going to get more eyes on our game. This is going to be good, blah, blah, blah. Like, you're leading that project up internally. You're going to really, like, you know, raise up the parts of like, this is really good exposure for the game. This is like good synergy with all the other things we're running. Like, you know, this will improve player base and do that. Meanwhile, you're going to people that have, you know, buying into the league. You're going like, this is a sustainable esport. Like, we're, you know, we want to make this ecosystem. We want to do this. Like, we want you guys to like make way more money back on your initial investment, et cetera, et cetera. And you're playing up that, which, by the way, it's not saying that like it's disingenuous and arguing that to both sides. I just think that, you know, if you're the crafters of the league, you're definitely playing up one side or the other, depending on what party you're talking to, because those are two like very key parties to keep happy in the entire Overwatch system, because Overwatch League doesn't work if the developers are, you know, kind of aggro towards it. And it also doesn't work if you don't have teams buying in that, you know, would like to make money. So, you know, it's in a way it's both, right? And I'm sure the people that, you know, crafted the Overwatch League, the people are still running it, would definitely argue to us like, yeah, of course we want to go for both. Now, you know, do both happen in actuality? Does one side get more power over the other? And, you know, the answer to that is like, well, it depends. What's the topic? What's the situation? Right. So.
Right. Yeah. And that's going to be a follow-up question. You know, it must be, I think everyone has heard some difficulties about the idea of, you know, esports being homegrown, being, you know, blazers and t-shirts, and then newer esports, bigger esports, trying to be more of like suit and tie, NFL type setups, all that good stuff. And then, you know, Blizzard, Overwatch League kind of was like, which one do we do? And it felt like the first season, they did a lot of the suit and tie. Then I felt like they kind of backed off a little bit. As a commentator for the Overwatch League at this point, do you feel like you have a clear goal? Like, are the producers talking to you, directors talking to you about what they want from your casts? Or is there also a bit of that complication of like, are we trying to appeal to esports or are we trying to appeal to casuals? Like, this is our end goal. Is there a direction for you as a commentator for Overwatch League?
I don't think there's really been any express goal in the sense of like, make your cast this way. I mean, I think the most would be like back in 2020, you know, we just, I think there was some direction that came down of going like, hey, you know, we think a lot of people watch the Overwatch League because, you know, they want to see how to play better, right? Like, you know, the stuff on the educational side is pretty good. Like, a lot of our player base are people that play Overwatch, so cater to that. I'd say actually, now I think about it, I do think like in 2018, Overwatch definitely had more of a push to be like, we need to capture everyone, like more casual. And I think recently, like over the last 2 years, there's definitely been more of a push to just kind of cater to the fan base that's there and the people that play a lot of Overwatch. So I think in the casting, there's less of a, you know, kind of going back to like the era where there's like cast on Disney, right? People's like, this is an ultimate ability. It spins you fast. It does damage. I love this special move. Like, instead of like things being in the exact, like most basic stuff, casting at least now assumes like certain degrees of knowledge, which is probably how it should be. I mean, it's how casting definitely was like for most games for a very long period of time. Like, no one's going to go into StarCraft to be like, thank you for watching DreamHack StarCraft. This is StarCraft. This is a command center. It builds SCVs. Like, no, people are like, what the fuck? I'm on a DreamHack stream. Like, come on. Like, so I do think they kind of have gone away from the, we need to explain the basics. Now, does that come back when there's suddenly an Overwatch 2 marketing push that's presumably going to happen, and they're going like, oh fuck, we got new eyes in Overwatch 2. Like, maybe we should remind people that, hey, there's one tank. Like, I know you have eyes, but let me tell you, there's one tank. It's 5v5. It's new, exciting. Like, is some of that shit probably going to be hit like extensively in the beginning? Probably. Like, but yeah, there has been kind of a little bit of a shift to going like, look, we can at least assume the people watching play our fucking game. So there's that.
Yeah. That's in itself an interesting subject. The international is literally going on as we're having this podcast, and I think Dota has been extraordinarily not beneficial to newbies, like not giving them the benefit out. They're trying to. I mean, it's just a whole can of worms in their own community, but for the most part, I see them as some of the most diehard, well, our esports fan or esports fans, and we're not really going to cater too much outside of that. But Overwatch League, despite not necessarily catering to new fans, I always felt like you guys, I always had a lot of respect for the broadcast. I think you guys are very, very good at what you do. But you guys don't baby anyone. I always feel like the type of basically joy that you guys have, you know, it always feels like it's almost like pageantry, you know, like there's a lot to look at. There's a lot to enjoy. You can just kind of listen in the background and be like, pretty. Yeah. This is nice commentary. Do you, as a commentator or your casting crew, I don't know how, you know, much you talk to the other commentator pairs, but do you have some way that you envision yourself welcoming newcomers? Because if you're not doing the whole, like, this is Zenyatta, he has orbs and he shoots them, then are you at all thinking about newcomers, or is it really just trying to hit those esports diehards fans?
I mean, I truthfully, internally, I don't even think about it as, you know, who am I talking to? Is it new or is it diehards? I just think I'm going to describe what I see accurately and, you know, try and do it in a, you know, relatively succinct way that's like not overly wordy, you know, get mm-hmm. to the point, stupid, essentially, for that. But yeah, I guess internally, I don't really think about it too much. And, you know, is this a new person watching? Is this that? I just, you know, describe what's going on, you know, as accurately as possible. But also, as succinctly. I think sometimes commentators get too much into the I must look very smart, and it's like sometimes, you know, stuff is actually simple. It's just like you shot the dude better, like that's it. You don't like, not everything has to be Giga Brain, which
yeah.
But by the way, like, as a side note, I think it's a real shame about how, you know, casting is developing in other scenes, where I feel bad when I look at like the development of Valorant, and you have like 40 casters on a weekend for some of these Nerd Street events. It's like, all right, you get one day, you know, every 2 weeks, you know, the sort of thing. It's like, you're not going to get great casting for that a lot of the time. Like, A, the viewers aren't going to fucking remember who they saw. Like, so it's really, really hard to build a community brand nowadays, relative to, you think back to the weeklies where me and Hex got to like be on for like 10 hours a day, mm-hmm. you know, that builds a brand and be like, oh, I know these guys. Like, can't build, if you're like brand new and, you know, you're not building a brand the way it is right now. You're like on once every 2 weeks, and then the casting itself, you're thinking like, oh fuck, this is my only cast like for the 2 weeks. All right, everything is a yelly shouty moment, and you know, I'm gonna, you know, try and like overly explain everything and try and make people go like, god damn, this guy's smart, because this is all I got. And you know, it's not great to do that. Like, the more reps people have and the more they're on, the more casters can actually like just treat the game as it should be, rather than people suddenly feeling like, oh shit, I gotta like, you know, make a spectacle out of this. It's like, eh. Mm-hmm.
It's been interesting watching and even slightly being a part of a new esport that's developing. I don't think I'm really part of Valorant, but I've done at least one decent gig by now. So, it's been interesting watching that, because I do agree, like, there's like so many people are getting Valorant gigs and actually being paid for it too, which is just mind boggling to me. StarCraft, you don't get paid till you're like on the stage casting. But it's a thing. And in some ways it's nice, because that means that there's a lot of tournaments happening. There's a lot of opportunities, a very healthy ecosystem. Everyone's very excited, right, for a new game. But on the other hand, absolutely. And I think I've even talked to people who are suspicious that the reason that, you know, one of the reasons they're doing this constantly, just like, you come on for 2 weeks, you come on for a week, you come on for 2 days, is that they're experimenting, that, you know, eventually end game for Riot is again to franchise the league and or make a league and then put on the usual people, like they do with League of Legends, right?
Yeah.
So I know that's a suspicion, but it's kind of the neat thing about well, neat, depending on your point of view, depending on your situation, about watching a new esport unfold. Because absolutely, this is a new challenge to casting a new game. It's not even just that it's a new game. It's maybe a little bit awkward. No one has the right tempo. It's also just that you don't really get the same situation to define yourself like you do in other games.
The entire dynamic has changed over time, right? Where it's like coming up now is not the same as coming up back in the day, especially for new games. That kind of goes back to the, you know, the content creation side of like, how do you do this, etc. Because I think people do look back going like, man, back in the day, people just casted a lot and they, you know, came up. It's like, well, you know, things have just changed over time. And, you know, you look at a game like Valorant and all that. And I guess the bigger point I was going to make is that, you know, you go to all that. I'm not sure it's a great product for the viewer either. Like, you talk about all the benefits of like a commentator of being on reliably, people getting to know you. But, you know, I do think you look at some of how, you know, recent esports have developed. There's less camaraderie where it's like, oh, it's these guys that are on. And, you know, it's one of those things where it might sound like almost self-serving as someone that, you know, has been more established in the industry. But, you know, even if you're picking new people, I kind of feel like, you know, there's, you could say people like Riot are trying to try new people, but I also think there's a genuine, like, good-hearted aspect. You know, if you give people the benefit of the doubt and ignoring like the downsides of like more caster competition, lower rates, which is all a thing. You know, I think there's also this idea of like, man, I want to give, you know, this person a chance. I want to give this person a chance. Like, wouldn't it be cool if everyone got a chance? But then there's also kind of the end product point of view. It's like, yeah, but like, wouldn't this entire thing have been a stronger tournament series if you just picked like, you know, four to, you know, at most six people and just like let them become the faces of the product and being the stuff that people really identified with the entire time. Like, so I don't know. There's a lot of competing factors. I will say is that like whatever side you're on, I do think the early part of Valorant, just watching it to like learn for the future, definitely way too many people that are in the rotation, like one way or another.
Yeah. Right now, as a commentator, I think, you know, I would prefer it. But as a viewer, absolutely, would I really prefer that? Probably not. If I were making a tournament and or a long running tournament and saying, what's the best approach? Would it be to hire 16 people or hire 8 people? Like, I'd probably say the 8. Make sure that they're really friendly. Make sure the camaraderie's broke. Like, but as I said, like, it might be an experiment. It's you know, more hopefully it's because there's so many individual organizations that you have a lot of opportunities. I do think it gets really odd, and there's probably an end goal that we don't know when Riot themselves are hiring, you know, 4 dozen people and not picking one and just going with it, right? Which I think they're starting to do a little bit more. You know, there's some expected names in Valorant at this point, but a lot of new ones. It's all just too interesting. There's too many things to talk about when it comes to esports. So I guess to hone in a little bit more on commentary. So this has been a lot about outside commentary things, right? And we even kind of preface this podcast with like, it's not how you commentate. But it obviously is important, right?
Yes.
First and foremost, what do you think was the change that made you go to Overwatch League, if you're comfortable talking about that? Like, you did eventually get hired after basically 2 or 3 years, people being like, oh, why didn't you get hired?
So, basically went into that is that, you know, talking to the Overwatch, I mean, obviously, you know, the person I was hired at the time, a guy named Carlton, I think was, you know, kind of aware of, you know, how year one was a little bit of a bum deal. I mean, you know, I had good, you know, talks with Carlton for a long time. He was like, you know, yeah, you know, you're pretty high up on the list. You know, we're going to need more people. You know, originally Overwatch League thought they would need way more commentators because they're going to do like regionalized commentators for the home away. Like, I'd heard things as much as like maybe we have like 6 to 7 pairs and that sort of thing. But how it worked out in the end was actually a little bit more reductive than that, which also proves like being on the grind and, you know, everything else like may matter less than you think. Is that what really happened was kind of another, they wanted a particular person to commentate because of a particular goal. And then I got chosen the co-commentator. Is that, So I had cast it with Jake in the past, and part of it is that in the 2018 World Cup, there was stuff that came up where like Hex couldn't do it, and I got asked who I wanted to cast with, and I thought, man, it'd be like a cool experiment to like cast with Jake, because, you know, Jake was a pro player and, you know, I thought we'd have a good duo dynamic, which, you know, I think we did. So I casted with Jake during that World Cup era. But and at the time, Nate Nanzer was like a huge fan of Jake. Right. And basically, I was like, hey, whenever you want to do commentary, you're right here. I probably and what there's kind of like this unspoken thing of, hey, if Jake wanted to retire after year one and go in the commentary, he would have had it. And I guess for that particular year, I would have been in a year earlier because they were kind of going on the spots going, okay, does Jake want to cast? Because, you know, Overwatch at the time really, really wanted Jake to cast. And it turned out Jake's like, no, I'm going to play another year. So Jake goes to play another year. And then they go, well, we also really like Wolf and Seth, and that's a complete duo. Like, ZP, you still don't have like a full duo, so we're going to bring in Wolf and Seth for like year two. When year three rolled around, and this is kind of the part where, you know, I was on the other end of what happened with me and Hex in 2018 initially, me and Avast had built up a really good following and really good momentum and contenders over that year. And like me and Avast, like we're in negotiations, you know, basically we're both under the impression we're both getting an offer for the 2020 season as a casting duo. And then the casting duo comes down and out of nowhere, it's like, yeah, actually, we want you to cast with Jake. And I'd found out after the fact that like they'd talk to Jake and go like, Jake, who do you want to cast with? Like, you're going to casting this year. And Jake's like, oh, I want to cast with ZP. And initially, Avast didn't get an offer in this particular year, which was really, really rough, obviously. So because then you have I basically had the experience the other thing, like, oh, shit. Like, OK, now I have an offer. The person I'm casting with does have an offer, and, you know, went back and forth. Now, luckily, Avast didn't get quite as boomed, where Avast would eventually get offered a desk spot. But he got offered it so late in the process that he already found a job with Envy as a content creator and is more on the streaming end. So he didn't end up taking the desk spot, but he wasn't left out in the cold. But yeah, that's kind of how it worked out. But there was an alternate universe that year where if Jake had decided, you're like, no, I don't actually like casting that much of that ZP guy, I want to cast with someone else, that I actually wouldn't have gotten in that year despite like casting from the beginning and having such a long resume and doing like every premier event that like was an Overwatch League at that time. So yeah, I mean, the way it worked out is that, you know, thank God Jake said like, hey, I want to cast with ZP, because if he didn't and it said someone else, you know, that could have worked out very, very differently.
Yeah. So
yeah,
it's treacherous, man. It's Overwatch League stuff sounds so difficult.
Well, there's one part in particular that makes OWL, and it probably will be the same for Riot if they go down a franchise league also for Valorant, is that the problem with a league-based stuff is that there's an upside and a downside, right? The upside is that when you get signed, you're good for the year. You don't have to worry about going to, like, five different tournament orgs and worried about being in constant negotiations and, you know, worried about event after event. The problem is you've now compacted all that stress into one particular offseason where if you don't get in, you are fucked. So, yeah. You know, it's a very, it's literally the all or nothing of the casting world, right? And yeah, it's a fortunate part about Overwatch League where it's like, you know, the way CSGO is, I think the way StarCraft is from what I've observed is that, you know, obviously there's a tier one in CSGO, there's a tier one in StarCraft, but there's at least in between tournaments where like not every top tier person is going to be there. And, you know, you'll have more ability to filter in where, you know, the unfortunate part of the way Overwatch is structured from a commentary perspective is that you're either in tier one and a lot of people are watching you, or you're in tier two and you're almost invisible. So it's, you know, getting Overwatch League versus not getting Overwatch League is like a really big deal, as it turns out.
Yeah. Yeah, that is absolutely the tough part. I mean, CSGO is probably the most on the opposites end, where it's just like there's so many things, there's so many different organizers, they all have their favorites, but they're willing to, some are willing to pick up new people. StarCraft, in a way, can be a little more like Overwatch League, just because we do have one major like LAN presenter, right? But we do have tons of online smaller things that are willing to experiment and bring on other people, absolutely. So I still think that we're in a better shape bat-wise. Compared to Overwatch League, but that means it's, yeah, as you said, the stress is all compacted in the off season. But you know, it highlights something that we talk about often on this podcast, which is that you do need some type of backup plan. Now I think people hear backup plan and they think of like, oh, make sure you get a degree, make sure that you have something to fall back on in case esports is just like kaput for you. When yes, that is important, Do you have a backup plan that is more along the lines of like, well, if I don't get Overwatch League, then I can do this gig in esports and this gig in esports and still be in contact for the future for the gig that would be really nice to have?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's nothing, you know, I think about things right now. There's not one concrete thing. I mean, there's always like, you know, streaming, assuming you do the right things. I think as long as you've made like decent connections, I think you have to be a real ogre in the industry if you've been around for a long time and a lot of industry events, not have like some connection if you really needed to. The going like, fuck, I need a job. Like if you wanted to get out of commentary or something like that. Like, I don't, you know, so long as people don't hate being around you and so long as like you still want to be in the industry, I don't think any commentator that's been around for a while should worry too much about job security within the industry. Now, commentating itself, that can be pretty hard. I will say one thing that, like, and I'm not going to call it anyone specific because I think, well, aside from it being really bad taste, you know, yeah. I think the one thing I will call it a little bit is that there are people that I think end up putting out a really like not great casting product because their point of view is like, I need to make a career as a caster. And then they have the one game they started with that they really wanted to cast. And, you know, either the opportunities have dried up or they, you know, never got them at all or anything like that. And they go, well, I still want to be a commentator. So I go to this other game. And then the commentator goes to that other game and they suck because they just have no passion for that game. And it shows like the knowledge is bad. The like everything about it is bad, but they're like, well, fuck, I guess I need to go cast that game. And you saw that, you know, in a lot of different games, not just like people trying to make an Overwatch with the Valorant, but also, you know, people in other games that decide they wanted to go to Valorant. And it's yeah. like, look, you know, I think you have to recognize if you're not enjoying what you're casting, like, I don't think anyone should ever cast a game, at least in the long term, that they do not actually enjoy. I mm-hmm. think that that is a recipe for failure. I think you're going to hate it. I think that your product's going to be bad and it's probably not going to be super successful. So it's like, at least, you know, if you're determined to keep casting, make sure you at least go to like games you like and not just a game you feel you have to cast because that's where like the biggest opportunity is, because yeah. maybe you're a god. Maybe you can sell it even if you hate the game and you're just doing it for a paycheck. I think there's a handful of like very talented individuals that could, but on the whole, you know, I don't think people should chase casting just for the sake of casting if they don't have at least a little bit of extra investment in the game. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I think there's people who disagree with you. I'm a little on the fence because I think there are basically like little like squirrels of commentators, and that they are almost in bad faith doing what you're talking about. You know, they're like, maybe they're desperate, and that's always fair. You know, they can't make rent. Like, kind of not going to judge them for that. But there's people who will just be like, if I jump on this new esport fast enough, then I'll be guaranteed to like get a decent couple of gigs, even though I don't really like this new esport. So
yeah.
You know, that can happen. And I think that's a bit, you know, bad faith. I think the end product is going to be bad. And then there's people who literally make it their job to be people who only cast like surface level a dozen games. And I don't think that's necessarily bad either. You know, a lot of times that's a host role.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say I guess I'll clarify. I'm speaking purely on the casting or analyst. Hosting is completely different in that regard, where I think, you know, there's a handful of incredibly talented individuals on the hosting role. I think it's like by far the hardest role to break into that consistently get tier one gigs. But if you're, you know, obviously like the greatest example of someone that's like one of the most talented human beings I've ever met, a great friend and a dude that just fucking rocks, Golden Boy, right? Mm-hmm. He does a whole bunch of different games. Is he going to be a top tier expert in every single game? Well, no, it's impossible to be an expert in every single game, but like, you don't need your host necessarily to be a top tier expert in every single game, because the guy is like one of the most charismatic people around that can just make any broadcast more entertaining just by being there, which is why he gets hired to host everything. So, you know, hosting, I definitely don't count hosting in the I'm doing a whole bunch of different games, etc. Also saying GB's case, even if he hasn't played a game enough to be like an absolute expert, that man just loves games. That man like can find joy in places where most people would have long checked out. Like,
yeah,
he is actually like a treasure. So in particular, but in general, I do think hosts play by different rules than dedicated casters, which is why hosting, if you are one of the privileged few that can do it, holy fuck, never leave hosting. Even though I know talking with a bunch of hosts, like while hosts get bored. It's like, yes, oh man, yeah. I wish I could be more involved, but it's like, you don't need to be, you're living the dream. Just enjoy it. What are you doing?
That's funny. It is funny. Cause I'll talk to hosts and they'll be like, you know, if you're going to do hosting, if you're going to try hosting, you know, and you're good at it, be prepared to be stuck as host. Yeah. Like some, you know, Kalaris has even called it a bit of a trap. He hasn't been invited to cast a StarCraft game since he became our like dedicated host 5-ish, 6-ish years ago or something like that. But you're right. Like it is the one that you can kind of go around the most with. And it's the trade off. There's only one host for most esports, but you can do a lot of esports and, you know, kind of do good jobs with it. So, hosting is I've never heard anyone call it like the job, you know, like you're living the dream, but it is funny because I think you're right. If you're good, then it is something that can be used in many different aspects, because being a good host also means that you're not just hosting esports desk segments. You're also probably going to be a good stage host. You're probably going to be doing, you know, expos at E3 and all that type of stuff. Like the hosting skill set seems to be more generalized.
For hosting, it's like, oh yeah, and on top of like having versatility to go from game to game, would you also like to maybe it's a little bit less post-COVID, but you know, before COVID destroyed the world, it's like, would you like to make, you know, $30,000 to $40,000 at E3 depending on the gigs you got? Well, let me tell you, you should be a host. That's where, like, God, like you talk with people when COVID first hit, like so many people that were more hosting specific make so much of their yearly income from E3. It's like E3 is canceled is actually a like kids were canceling Christmas moment. Like it was not good.
No. Yeah. I definitely stage host in particular, anyone who's made their job off of stage hosting and can't quite desk host. Like I think I felt for them a lot when COVID hit, you know, so many things that COVID actually hit in a terrible way. Photographers, so many it's obviously been terrible there. A lot of that would be the only benefit, I feel like, not the only benefit, but one of the benefits of being an analyst, a color commentator or a desk analyst, is that it can mostly be put on to online. We do have to start wrapping up. Unfortunately, I have a billion more questions for you, but I think to wrap it up here, I'll ask kind of a broad question. What do you think it is that makes you such a beloved commentator? I think that's fair to say. The community has always seemed to really love you. Obviously, you said that Jake said, you know, yes, he's cool. But what do you think makes you desirable? I know it sounds a bit weird, but what do you think makes you a good commentator? And what do you find that you're looking at to work on and take inspiration from to be a good of a commentator?
Yeah, I mean, I think I look back to how I started in Overwatch, and I think you know, it definitely helped the nature of the community, the weeklies, and like how Hex and I came up, right? Where it just sort of, we definitely, it wasn't necessarily the grand plan, but it worked out to going, you're commentating for 10 hours a day. You know, you're not going to be very high strung during that, right? Like you're definitely going to get like a more chill buddy vibe, because, you know, even as you put high energy into the games, like you're just going to be hanging out, right? So that like, you know, those days with Hex definitely built like a good rapport with the community, because like, fuck, if you're on for 10 hours straight, you know, you just kind of have to, or, you know, people are going to, I guess, inherently hate you. So it's one of those things where, you know, just having that long experience of like long street, you know, it was casting, but in a way it almost had like some links of streaming the way a lot of those early streams started. But yeah, I mean, aside from that, casting wise, I mean, you know, I've always tried to be pretty accurate in my commentary, you know, avoid like massive mistakes where possible, because it's kind of funny on the contrary. And I feel like, you know, adding extra detail, being more specific is great, but like getting something wrong is such a negative, like reputation hit relative to the bonus points you get for when you get something right. So it's like avoiding unforced errors in commentary definitely helps. Where, by the way, you'll never avoid all of them. And especially when you get to the Overwatch League level, you get to points where people are such big super fans of teams that merely suggesting a team is doing something wrong, like, we'll get some hate. Some teams more than others. Like, you suggest that Philly's doing something wrong nowadays, and season one, season two of the Overwatch League, like, man, Philly fans are coming after you. This year, people are just like, oh, man, like, we're from Philly. We hate our team more than you hate our team, you know? But, you know, you throw some shade Chengdu's way, maybe you get some shit. By the way, you shouldn't edit your commentary for that. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I've just always tried to put on a good product. I've tried to, you know, connect with you know, you don't base your casting off of like what the community is saying or anything per se, but like, you know, you just be a part of the community. You'd be aware of like what's relevant to them and, you know, basically cast like you actually care about the game and you're around 24/7 because, you know, in my case, I was.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of, you know, sum it up, like, it's like be passionate about the game, right? Yep. Definitely be involved in the community, I do think is almost always beneficial, even if it's not the reason you're going to get gigs. And then, I think playing it safe is like, play it safe until you're confident with what you're saying,
yes.
Right? Like if you are 100% confident that this works against this, yeah, say it. But if you're like, well, what if I'm wrong? Don't start speaking, then kind of backtrack, then kind of waffle, and then like make it either awkward or straight up wrong. I do think that is, it's hard to put in practice because when you start commentating, the words are just coming out, right? But yeah. The more that you can be, I think, aware of it, the better you are. And then just being that happy person who doesn't do anything glaringly wrong, that works well with others and can be passionate and hype about a game. I think that actually takes you a really long way in a lot of games. It's the baseline of good commentary is making someone enjoy listening to you. So.
Yeah. And I mean, also, I guess a note of, you know, wherever you are, definitely, you know, take the losses in stride. Never go to social media. Like, you know, one of the things I look back that I'm happy about and whatnot. Cause, you know, going back to the season one story, it's like, yeah, obviously I was like super depressed and, you know, had internal thoughts about, oh shit, like this sucks, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, you know, at the end of the day, I never blamed Semler personally for taking the gig. It's like, dude, you got offered a fucking like fat bag of money. Of course you're going to take it. Like that, like you taking the offer had nothing to do with me in terms of like why you would take the offer. It's not like, it's like, man, you know, I met that guy once at E-League and, you know, actually fuck that ZP guy. I'm going to go over here. It's like, no, dude, like Overwatch League offered you like a massive amount of money, the fucking swap. So, you know, yeah, I wasn't, you don't have to be fake on social media and be super eager and be like, I'm so fucking excited that everyone else got in looking for my, like, I do think that shit's a little bit fake. I mean, I don't think it hurts to do that, but it's like, no, actually, like if you get passed up for a gig and like you felt you needed it, like just, you know, you could say, hey, you know, not casting event, you know, good luck to those that did, but you don't have to like, again, I'm not going to name any names, but like look at casting across all games. There's definitely people that like lay on thick stuff where it's like, dude, there's no way you actually think like you're being disingenuous as fuck. Like,
because
I basically just got off social media for a while after season one as, I said, hey, I get a lot of questions. Nope, not casting it. But, you know, I never said a bad word against Semler because that'd be fucking stupid. It had nothing to do with that. And that would like, that'd be a good way to have like go back in time and just like murder your career and be like, I am so upset Semler got picked instead of me, blah blah blah. It's like, all right, well, cool, we're not working with this fucking dipshit, like, take the shit in stride, you know.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it. Like, take all this in stride. It, you're gonna feel salty and you're gonna feel like, you know, even that you deserve some things and that the person you're contending with might not be, they might be straight up bad at this point, they might straight up even be a hateful person. Like, if the reason that you hate them is that behind the scenes they're like a sexist douchebag, even then, don't say anything on social media, right? Like, take that shit up with I guess your peers, your coworkers, in professional ways. If someone's a sexist douchebag, I actually don't know what you should do, but that was an extreme example, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone like knows like there's a handful of like people in the industry that have stories and whatnot, and it's
sure.
I mean, I think you bring up those concerns with like tournament organizers, and you know, you do it in a very careful way. I think obviously there's situations like if it's something like super glaring, like abuse, etc. Like, you know, you probably do have to go public, but like if it's kind of one of those things where it's like, this guy rubs me the wrong way and like he's a jerk, like type of stuff, like not rising to the level of like holy fuck, like the world needs to know, right? But just this guy's just an ass, you know. Perhaps do not publicly air that out, because there is kind of there like a code of, you know, I mean, it goes like this for a lot of things, like too. It's like you leave an employer and you, by leaving, as you leave the employer, you go, the management sucked, everything was bad, like blah blah blah. It's like, well, the next person's hired is like, damn, this guy just like fucking torched his old employer. Do I really want to hire this guy? So I'm not even sure casting is like that unique in that regard. I think it's just, you have more glaring cases at times of people like blowing themselves up on Twitter in their careers because it's, you know, people are passionate. Things are, you have access to like a big base, usually if you've had any success. So like the temptation is there, but
Yeah.
Don't give in. It's a bad idea.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Shouldn't have brought up that extreme example, but you're right. Yeah, like, yeah. If someone's just, you don't get along with them like that, that's the type of stuff that needs to also stay, like, you know, into you. So if you don't want to say anything about not getting hired, that's also totally fine. That's probably even the way to go. And if you want to give a broad general statement, because this is a thing that's come up. I mean, even with Dota, even with International, that was actually an issue. And, you know, the best thing the guy could have done was just been like, happy for everyone else. I wish I was there, but please don't antagonize them, because that's what ended up happening. Great move by that dude. Great move.
Yeah.
And that's what most people should do. Because I've been through this whole thing too, of being salty and chipping my shoulder. And it's just like, it doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help you. Doesn't help your chances in the future.
Yeah, because here's the thing. And this is one of those things where, like, I know, like, you know, social media, like, people have this perspective of, like, almost wanting people to elevate themselves above stuff. It's like, just as I think anyone that expects players, like, competitive players to not be, like, at the very end, like, you know, internally, like, shit talkers going, like, you know, fuck that guy, I'm better than that guy. Well, you have to have that mindset to, like, actually be good as a competitive player. I think the same thing for commentary, right? Is that if you want to be good as a commentator, you have to have, like, a fire going, like, I want this job. Like, I think I'm good enough for this job. If you don't have disappointment and in some part of you doesn't think, like, God damn, like, you know, I thought I was better than this other person, or at least some of the people in some way. Like, if you don't think that at all, like, okay, your passion might have left you a long time ago. Doesn't mean you ever say that you think you're better than someone or anything like that, but it's kind of like, you know, it is inherently a little bit of a competitive industry. Like, you're a product where you want to improve your product. And, you know, I think the people that don't have the fire to, like, at least think those thoughts internally, they're going to find it tougher to succeed. But, you know, again, just have a fucking filter. Don't actually, like, throw that up publicly, be like, I'm better than this guy, or, exactly, you know, whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine to have emotions. It's fine to have many different emotions, but the whole point of being an adult and a professional is filtering them. Is exactly what it is to be an adult. So that works in every line of daily life. What a beautiful little note to end on. Yeah. Life advice from CP. but thank you for coming on. I really enjoyed it. I know I began kind of saying that you've worked, like, in the scene for so much, and, you know, behind the scenes a lot too, and that's mostly what we ended up talking about, but I had a blast. Would love to have you on again in the future to talk maybe more specifically about casting, because I think you're an excellent commentator as well, but I'm glad to have at least gotten this chance to chat with you for now. So where are people going to find you? I mean, I guess Overwatch 2 is going to come out, like, next year, so... Are you streaming? Are you doing anything else in the off season?
Yeah, probably going to be streaming more. What's it called? I was intending to be on more of an active stream schedule right now, but some stuff came up. But still cannot put that away, because it was talked about here in the business side of things. I don't think you can in the end. I think it's, you got, or at least you have to be doing something content wise. And streaming is still, like, probably the most organic to me. So, you know, Twitch, ZP_TV, Twitter, at TempoZP, where... Yeah, at some point I probably should have gotten that change, but now it's just stuck because I have the check mark. So, yeah, the tempo's there forever from old streaming era, and, you know.
You and all the people who still have StarCraft in their name or SC in their name. There's so many people who had to get their name changed.
Yeah, I mean, I think Twitter gaming, like, actually can help with name changes a little bit, but there's part of me that's almost like, oh, fuck, like, I change it now. Like, there's so many VODs I have the Twitter link. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
That is my Twitter for now. This podcast just adds to it. It actually just adds to it.
It did. Yep.
Yeah.
That is life. Go. That is life in the ever-evolving world of digital media.
Yep.
Well, anyways, thank you again. I hope to see you. I follow your stream, and guys, make sure to check them out. Big thank you to everyone who supports on the Patreon. Nick, Vinny, Steven, ET, and Ruby, thank you guys very much. And I hope you out there enjoyed episode 37 with CP. I'll see you later for episode 38. Bye.